Good morning. Today is Friday, June the 12th. Not to be confused with Friday the 13th, because that's a Saturday this time around. Joining us this morning is the gal of all hats, Amy Conlon from Humboldt Bay Fire. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is it raining in downtown?
It is.
Or drizzly, I guess, is probably better.
Yeah.
Oh, too much fun. Just when we get a little bit of a streak running, then we remember where we are and why we are here. Rain. That's the middle initial of Humboldt County. Winston, why do we say it?
Well, since Sean's not here, Amy's going to have to cover this one. Since we did port last time Sean was here, what is the reason the right side of a ship is called the starboard side?
Ooh, I don't know.
I'm thinking something with navigation and the stars.
Yeah, like the stars, something.
The term comes from the Old English steerboard, meaning steering side, because early sailing ships all had the steering oar placed on the right side.
Oh, that's practical. pretty straightforward stuff. Oh, so Amy, you are part of the cloister every once in a while, with the incident command and all the stuff that's going on. From your perspective, what kind of sense do you have is normal, or I guess routine, now pretty much established in there, or is it something that's still kind of a challenge in a full day event to process through whatever they do?
Yeah, you know, it is still a really dynamic situation, and that, you know, 2 days are really the same, I think, in commanding this incident, just because it's always changing, and, you know, the roadmap and trying to get everything ready for, you know, balancing public health and reopening and all of that is such a tight line to walk, and depends so heavily on how things are going, not only here, but in the state and in the country. And so there is a lot of moving pieces and still quite a bit going on in there.
So what, other than just information collecting, what's talked about? I mean, what is a normal day? I can't imagine 8 hours sitting there and just waiting for test results to come in from the various health facilities where testing occurs.
Sure. Well, there's two different sectors. So there's the Joint Information Center part of it, which has half of that is divided into a call center. So they have the 707-441-5000 phone number and email address that the public can call into or email into with their questions or their direct questions that they need answered. So half of that team is focused on direct community engagement in that way, answering those questions. And then the other side of the room is essentially creation. So that side of the room creates all the things that you see on a daily basis that with regard to the information being pushed out. So when you see how many tests and positive cases, hospitalizations, recoveries, deaths, all of that comes out of that part of that office. They're also the ones processing and approving the business reopening plans. So that's been like 1,500 or so plans so far that they've had to go through and approve to make sure that our businesses in the community are aware of the risks and know how to mitigate those. So they're processing all of that. And in addition, they'll do all of the creation for what's on the website and what's on the social media pages and kind of handling the messages that go out. They do the press releases and the interviews with the doctor and the sheriff and the COVID minutes and all that kind of stuff. And then on the other side of the room, in the EOC proper, you have, you know, logistics and finance and everyone who's working on the alternative care sites and the testing sites and getting those mobile and trying to get more of a presence and capture more of our population in regards to testing. And you have all the folks who are doing the contact tracing and so on and so forth. So there's a ton that's going on for sure.
What is an alternative care site?
So the alternative care site is part of the requirement for reopening for us because it acts as a surge for if the hospitals become overwhelmed. So part of us moving towards reopening is getting prepared for, okay, well, if you reopen, what happens if you have a surge in cases? And so this is the answer to that question, and it meets the requirement of the state for us to start moving forward. So in essence, if our hospitals become overloaded with COVID-19 cases, certain cases that meet certain requirements would be transferred to this quote-unquote alternative care site that's been set up, or they can be monitored and given care and then moved out once they have recovered.
What is the number? How many people would it take to overrun the three hospitals? And I don't know if Open Doors is part of the equation is with the treatment part. But what number are you looking at? Is it 50 people? Is it 100 people? Is it 400 people? What is that point where these would need to come into play?
Yeah, I don't think there's a certain specific answer to that. It depends on what else, how many other folks we have in the hospital at any given time. So if we, you know, if there happen to be a lot of folks needing hospital care, you know, we may be overwhelmed with a much smaller number than if the hospitals are mostly empty. So I don't think that there's one specific number, and if there is, I'm not aware of it. But it would just be the hospitals themselves as well have prepared for a certain amount of surge. You know, they're capable and ready to expand a little bit beyond their normal numbers. But if we were to go beyond that, then this is kind of where that spillover would happen.
So those are just kind of sitting there mothballed, waiting. If need be, somebody comes in, opens the door, throws on the lights, dusts everything off, and off to the races?
Yep, absolutely. They are ready to go.
Now, could those also be used in, you know, I don't know how permanent they are where the locations are, for wintertime when we have the floods and, you know, for an earthquake with the displacement? I mean, can they be there, or are these kind of impinging on existing business spaces and, yeah, they're available now, but not necessarily in the future?
Yeah, this particular alternative care site is in a location that is normally, you know, operating as a business location. So it's not necessarily that this is going to be the location of an alternative care site forevermore, but certainly the experiences that the command team has gone through in this incident and having had to set up a site like this and having that experience and knowing what the toll is and the labor and the cost and all of that, it's certainly something now that they have experience in should that be needed for a flooding situation or some kind of displacement situation. I think, you know, obviously when you've gone through it once, it's a lot easier the second time.
Sure.
So
it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Amy Conlin from Humboldt Bay Fire. Amy, how many tests are done each day in Humboldt County for the virus?
So it varies. We have a couple of sites that are directly linked to the Department of Health and Human Services and the Public Health Office. So that's the Public Health Lab and the OptumServe test site at Redwood Acres.
So that's Redwood Acres, and the other one's the one that's at the top of Booner Hill?
Correct.
Okay.
And so, gosh, I wish I had the number right on the top of my head. I'll have to look at what their capacity is now. I think it's right around 2,000. So, 1,950. So they can process about 70 samples a day, and those turn around between 2 and 3 days. And they have that capacity of approximately about almost 2,000 tests there. So that's us. And then there's also commercial labs and CDC labs and other labs who do on-site testing or particular testing for certain groups, certain people. So those numbers get ultimately collated
folded into the other
serve as well.
So yeah. we have CDC representatives here or an office here?
We don't. It's just if we have Humboldt County residents that are elsewhere, or if we have someone who we know is likely to be a confirmed positive case, contact with a positive case, they'll go through a different channel than showing up at the community testing site, for example, because we want to do our best to limit, known or likely contacts with places where others are going to be.
There are a couple of states that are seeing some increases in the positive testing that goes on, and I think it was the Arkansas governor that said, we're doing so many more tests now. It stands to reason we're going to have more positive responses because we got more people in the pool, so to speak.
Right.
And he still feels comfortable with what they're doing. I think it's Asa Hutchings. Do you have any indication either from Billy or the health officer in either Humboldt or in adjacent counties or at the state level that what is the magic trigger if to go backwards again, would we need to have 20 or 30 or 50 in one day to get everybody to start thinking that they're going to reverse the positive momentum that's going on right now?
Yeah, I don't know what the exact number or trigger would be. I know when we put in our attestation to the state for approval to move into that accelerated phase two that we're in now, that there were those contingencies agreed upon between the governor and our public health officer and our sheriff. And so I don't know exactly what that trigger would be, but that is part of the understanding is that, hey, if we start moving down this path and then things take a turn for the worse, that the expectation is we'll kind of slow our roll a bit, pull back, and take the necessary precautions to make sure that we're not moving too quickly and putting folks at risk. So we've kind of seen, we had that spike with the cases associated with Alder Bay and that contact tracing line, and now we're seeing it flatten off again. I think for the past several days we've had zero or only one case, and so we're starting to flatten that curve again for the second time here locally.
So with that kind of as the backdrop, how long until, I guess we still have got, vacation travel for the hotel and motel, the tourist industry folks to be able to get fired back up again? Are they indicating some, I think Billy last week said something about today might be the day when they make the announcement when the lodging industries will be able to not just deal with the folks that they have, but actually be able to welcome visitors that are normally here this time of the year. You getting any kind of feedback or indication that today's going to be that day, or if the standards that they're going to be referencing have been met to allow that to occur?
Yeah, so June 12th was the day. So according to the state now, as of today, June 12th, the county leaders have the ability to decide whether or not they want to allow leisure travel. So that is today. I'm not sure if our local health officer has made a determination yet, because the counties have the ability to be more stringent than the state. They just can't be less stringent than the state.
Right.
So I'm sure we'll see something here soon, if not today, about travel, as well as, we saw that the guidance came out for campgrounds and some of the other
kind of related.
Some of the other sectors, that are a little bit related to that. And so the guidance is out for those. I'm sure it'll just be a number of time before we start seeing approvals for those and allowing folks to come back in. But as you know, where we are, we can stay somewhat isolated. And once we lift that door, some of our local control goes away. So that's definitely a big decision.
Have you been privy to any conversations that talk about acceptable levels of risk? That might be a third rail discussion for anybody that's in some employment basis. But you would think, and I know that lots of folks are very familiar with the stories, but at some point you're not going to be able to have zero. What is an acceptable level?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think those conversations are certainly being had above my level, but I certainly don't envy the position that, you know, the health officer and the sheriff are in, where you really are having to, it's this really finite balance between how much risk and how many positives and whatnot are we willing to have versus, you know, making sure that we're not completely shutting everything down and thereby ruining our local economy altogether. So it's that balance between what is that acceptable level of risk. And, you know, I think they've been doing, you know, such a good job with this, what really has been an unprecedented event.
Hi, I'm Vanessa with PG&E. If you see a down power line, stay away from it and keep others away. Call 911. Let our first responders come out and handle it. Police and fire will respond as well as PG&E. To learn more, visit pge.com/safety.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at smokeybear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Amy Conlon from Humble Bay Fire. Amy, typically this time of the year, what we talk about is fire, fire prevention, don't get lost out in the woods, et cetera, as the, you know, the camping season is, in theory, has begun, and we're doing a whole bunch of that stuff. And obviously, it's a delayed season this year, but we did have some of those thunderstorms and a little bit of lightning. What was it, early this week or tail end of last week?
Yeah, I mean, it was last end of last week, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what are we, you know, for what is permitted right now, I know the campgrounds just were opened. Can you camp out in the woods? Can you go to the lakes? I mean, what is the status of campability in the area?
Well, campgrounds aren't open yet. Their guidance just came out to put in their reopening plans yesterday, so they can put in their plans and the city or the county will look over those. You know, that being said, I'm sure people are anxious to get out and are going to be camping and moving around a bit anyway. We expect it to be a pretty active fire season this year. The crews last night around, or this morning, I guess around 3 a.m. had a vegetation fire just this morning, and we know that there's a few fires going around in the state right now. The Cal Fire is already out on. I think it's any indication it's going to be an active season.
So what does that mean practically to you guys? Obviously, you're going to ramp up the messaging side of things, but structurally, with the challenges or the overlay, if you will, with the health stuff, can you afford to ship people out, or are you going to kind of try to keep everybody here at home and be a little bit more restrictive on how often you send a crew out to respond in with an MOU?
Yeah, so that's been a discussion, and it's been, you know, a subject of attention for essentially as this entire COVID-19 crisis has been happening, because like you just mentioned, when you go out on a large wildfire, you have a camp, you know, everyone is not, you know, having the ability to social distance. There's less maybe opportunities for regular showers and things like that. And so there's just an increased risk, certainly with that fire camp setting, for COVID to spread. And so working with Cal Fire, they have come up with a plan to a set of a more stringent structure so that we can still go out and still help the state with those more active fires and maintain our safety and our crew's safety. And so then, you know, depending on how long that assignment is and what their level of exposure and risk was, then when they return back home, there would be a certain level of quarantine or testing or, you know, whatnot that would be done to make sure that we're not bringing anything back to our crew and our community as well.
So it's when you go out, we're diminished. And then when you come back, it's plus 2 weeks of being impacted by folks going out. I would think that if you sent somebody out, they would have to be the guys that stay out, that you're not going to rotate them back in to the regular population and send out another crew in an exchange-like program.
Yeah, it'll really have to be a case-by-case basis. Like you said, depending on how long they're going to be out, what the season looks like, what kind of crew availability we have as far as who's willing to go out on those longer assignments and what their exposure is. It's not necessarily that they'll have to have a full two-week quarantine. It depends on, you know, where they – or did they get an assignment, you know, over the radio and go immediately to a location where they had, you know, distance from other crews and didn't necessarily share. So it just depends on the situation. And certainly our crew safety and their family safety and the community safety is our priority. And so when we're going out on these assignments, that'll all definitely be taken into consideration.
Were any of the guidelines adopted for Cal Fire, ones that Humboldt Bay Fire has incorporated, or vice versa?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think everyone is trying to follow CDC guidelines as closely as possible. So, you know, limiting, you know, family visits and folks coming into stations and making sure that we're taking temperatures and sanitizing and washing and all of that. I mean, the extra PPE for calls, you name it. I mean, I think everyone has taken those precautions on because you simply can't afford not to. And you know, it's our duty to protect the safety of this community, and we need to do that by our response to COVID as well. So
it makes a ton of sense. And they're running around with plexiglass shields in front of them, too?
Not quite, but almost.
Getting there. All right. KINS News and Information Times 841.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 845. We're back talking shop this morning with Amy Conlon from Humboldt Bay Fire. Amy, as things continue to kind of percolate and go through, what do you see is going to be normal for the next 2 or 3 months? Is anybody talking about not having the masks inside of closed environments, or is that going to be something that's now part of this until, I guess, maybe the feds say that it's over?
Yeah, I think the masking is going to continue. I think as we ease up on some of these other things, like allowing dine-in and allowing more businesses and more facilities to open, those kind of personal protective measures like the masking and the sanitizing and the hand washing is only going to become more important. So I haven't heard anything about lifting the masking requirement. I haven't heard anything about lifting the shelter in place. Those are post phase four realities, I'm sure. And I think at this point, it's too early to tell any time frame of when that might be.
So what is the current status? And you mentioned the shelter in place, and early on, that meant don't go out. Okay, but
right.
Now we've got businesses open. Obviously, that they've got their staffing and vendors that need to be there. And in presumption that there's going to be customers also, which doesn't sound like it's staying at home. Now we're starting to kind of get out and about and do. So when you said shelter in place, what is the current definition of that?
Right. So the idea is that you are staying home except for essential activities or working in an essential business, or, you know, now as we open more businesses and have more things open that you're going to work in those places, you're picking up and taking home. The real focus is for our at-risk populations, folks who already have underlying health conditions or are over the age of 65, that they're really continuing to abide by that shelter in place. And as more things open that are not, haven't been, weren't deemed essential in the beginning, that we're just using caution when using those facilities. So, for example, one of the things that opened up for curbside a little later on was bookstores. So it's not that we expect, you know, folks to leave their house and go and stroll around a bookstore. It's more that you can order books and go and pick them up curbside on your way home from, you know, your work site or something like that. And so trying to get more of our economy stimulated and give people a little bit more of a sense of normalcy, that there is some things that they can go and do and take advantage of and then go back and remain safe by sheltering in place.
Now, there was a robust discussion about certain stores being able to be open when others weren't in the retail sector here locally. You mentioned bookstores, which is probably one of, if there was such a thing as a puzzle store, that would be another issue for me as well. You know, going in, you're looking for books to purchase, not necessarily going in with a book to purchase. So, I mean, you could use clothing also as an example. Most folks want to see what it looks like on them or make sure that the size fits. Well, you're not going to do that in the front seat of your car as you're in the parking lot waiting for somebody to, you know, stand there and take it in or exchange the sizing. So, you know, some of these things, while seem good theoretically, really don't have an awful lot of practicality to them if we're trying to allow the local business operators to respond rather than having to deal with or go to the internet as a way to satisfy whatever their needs are. Is there recognition of that kind of thing or not?
I think, obviously, I mean, there is recognition of that. But I have been surprised and in awe of our local business owners at how resilient they have been and how adaptable they have been, and creative, you know, and so finding ways to market what they have in the store online so that folks can kind of explore and see that and then call in an order, or, you know, for clothing, being able to have good photos of the clothing and then corresponding measurements so that you can try to get the best fit possible. I mean, it's not the ideal, obviously. We all want to go in and try on our clothes and look at stroll for books and all that. But, you know, we're trying to, like you said earlier, find that balance point of what's the acceptable risk. And so trying to come up with these contingency plans, essentially, for something that we've never quite faced before, and have things available, but still have that level of care. Well, yeah, we don't want to necessarily go in after someone's tried a shirt on and try that same shirt on in the midst of a pandemic, you know. And so,
yeah, well, time certainly will tell. Hopefully we'll get that good news from Billy and the gang that hotels and motels are going to be released to do business later on this afternoon. Thanks for popping in.
All right, have a good one.
All righty, Amy.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For having me. Bye.